This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. For 10 years, a patient with multiple myeloma underwent numerous treatments for this incurable cancer. They tried everything, chemotherapy, stem cell transplants, but the cancer returned time and time again until last summer. That's when she received a new kind of treatment, and this June, 1 year later, the patient was still cancer-free. What was this magic medicine? The measles. Well, it wasn't exactly the measles. It was a form of the measles virus that had been re-engineered to specifically target and destroy cancer cells. But here's the thing. Despite this victory, it's been hard to translate the success of cancer-killing viruses in the lab translated to the clinic. My next two guests are trying to change that. Dr. Stephen Russell, who treated the patient, he's professor of molecular medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira.
You're welcome. Dr. Balveen Kaur, she's professor and vice chair of research at Ohio State University's Comprehensive Cancer Center in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Kaur.
Thank you, Ira.
Before we get into this patient's case, why use viruses, Dr. Kaur, to attack cancer cells?
Well, it's that's a really good question. So you can think of viruses as these tiny biological weapons, and these viruses are usually tuned or trained so that they can infect normal cells. But it's a self-limiting infection, so normal cells can easily overpower these viruses and get rid of the infection. But cancer cells are a lot of times weakened in their ability to fight these infections, and so the virus can basically replicate, destroy cancer cells, amplify, make more new viruses, which can then go and more cancer cells that surround it. Mm-hmm. And so in theory, this is a treatment that should be dose independent and very, very targeted.
Dr. Russell, how do you alter the virus to go then just after the cancer cells?
Well, we were very fortunate with this virus. The virus we've been using actually came from the throat of a man named David Edmonston in 1954. Which was about the beginning of isolating viruses on cultured cells. And his virus was grown on a variety of different cells in the lab to weaken it. And all of the measles vaccines that are currently used in the West and that have been used in the West over the years to eliminate measles came from his throat. And we took a strain of virus that derived from his throat and we taught it to grow on cancer cells, on human cancer cells. And that's how it became specific for cancer. Mm-hmm. And then we engineered it by introducing a gene into it to sort of to make it glow in the dark so that we could actually perform an imaging study to see where the virus had got to in the body.
And you had to give massive doses of the virus, right? Not just the normal infection you might get with measles.
Yes, because we're not using it as a vaccine. You know, if you use a vaccine, you give the minimum dose you can give in order to alert the immune system. We're using it as a weapon, and we give it into a vein, and we ask those viruses to seek and destroy the cancer cells. And there's a large number of cancer cells in the body, so you need to give massive dose of virus.
How successful? Now, you've done this on one or two patients. Do you think this can be used on other patients and other kinds of cancers?
We have actually given this massive dose to six patients. Mm-hmm. Two of those patients had no anti-measles antibodies in their blood. And one of them had a complete response of her cancer, and the other patient had a partial response of her cancer. And when we did the imaging studies, we could see that the virus very clearly lit up the sites of cancer growth. So we knew we were targeting the cancer. We don't think either of these patients is cured. And the treatment needs to be better. You know, what we've learned from this is you need to give a massive dose if you're going to see anything. And the antibody present in the bloodstream will actually negate the benefit of giving the virus. So you have to find a virus that is not going to be obstructed by antibody in the patient who's being treated.
If the patient doesn't have any trace of cancer, Why can't you say the patient has been cured?
Because in the patient who had a complete response of her myeloma, she had a tumor on her forehead as well as a number of other tumors in her body that lit up on the PET scan. She also had her bone marrow was diffusely infiltrated with myeloma. And all of that regressed, but after 9 months, the tumor on her forehead started to come back, and it was irradiated. The cancer has not come back anywhere else, and the tumor on the forehead has not come back subsequently, so we do not think it's a cure.
So what would you describe it as then?
A complete response. It's
fine line we're walking here?
Well, it's a very important distinction. Mm-hmm. And, I think people need to understand that when we talk about complete responses in cancer therapy, we talk about getting the cancer to the point where we're unable to detect any cancer in the body. That doesn't mean there's none there. And a great deal of the management of cancer is trying to prevent the cancer from coming back because we suspect it will, even though there's no detectable cancer cells in the body.
Dr. Kaur, why has it been so difficult to move the treatments that are successful in the lab to patient settings?
Well, there's several different hurdles which laboratory bench-side research has to overcome before it can go and be tested in patients, which is what's close to the hearts of all the translational researchers. A lot of these studies are done with viruses or other biological agents that are generally made in the lab, which are very easy to generate. And it takes a huge amount of funding and years of effort to optimize this lab-generated product into a product that can be administered to patients, which can be made in a batch-to-batch way with a certain testing and safety quality control methods. And this whole process of translation is very rigorous. It's very important, but it's also not as innovative because it's the next important steps that really need to happen. So while it is extremely important, it's not as innovative. And so this automatically reduces the amount of funding that is available to all these projects of biological therapies. So in a sense, there seems to be a bottleneck of funding where there's a lot of funding available in the discovery stage. But then when these products have to be developed further, which is where a huge amount of investment, both in terms of time and money, takes place, the opportunities for funding those really does reduce a lot.
Do I hear, does that mean, and I'm trying to go through, parse through what you're saying, does that mean you can't, it's not patentable and your drug companies can't make a lot of money out of making a medicine out of it?
It is patentable. There are absolutely patents available out there. There's money that drug companies can make out of it. But in order to get it to the stage where it has started a phase one testing in patients, when drug companies really get excited about it, it's that realm of gray zone between curing mice and creating a product which can get an FDA IND to be actually tested in patients where there's a lot of limitations, mainly in the funding.
Mm-hmm. So it's promising. It works sort of well. It clears the cancer out of some of the patients, but it's not a cure yet. And Dr. Russell, where would you go from here to get it more mainstream? If it seems to be working in people, shouldn't it be further investigated?
Well, the significance of this case that we recently reported is that the field has a very, very long history, and this is the first time that it's been well documented that a patient has received an intravenously administered virus, and that's caused complete remission of disseminated cancer. So it's a milestone. You know, we've known for a long time this was possible in mice, but we have not known that it was possible in people. We now know it's possible. This should energize the field, but we have a lot of work to do. And so where we're going with this measles virus study that we've done is that we're about to move into a phase two clinical study in which we'll test the same high dose of virus in a larger number of patients with advanced multiple myeloma who have no treatment options. We will select patients who do not have any anti-measles antibody in their blood, and we'll see whether this can really be replicated. And, you know, hopefully by combining the virus with drugs or by increasing the dose further still, we will be able to get those complete cures, which we'd love to see. And we certainly can achieve that in mice.
If the viruses act to weaken the cancer that's growing there, could they not be combined with cancer-fighting drugs that would then be multiplied by the action of the virus?
Yes, and that's an extremely exciting area. In fact, I think Balveen, Dr. Kaur, has recently published a paper on the combination of her herpes virus with an anti-cancer drug and had very promising data. There's also a great deal of interest at the moment in the checkpoint inhibitor antibody therapy approach to cancer, which allows the immune system to really get at the cancer in a way that it never was able to before. And because viruses are able to alert the immune system to the presence of the cancer when they infect the cancer cells, that combination looks like a really promising approach to pursue.
I'm Ira Flato. This is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International, talking about viruses as potential treatments for cancer. You know, we hear a lot of times about doctors or researchers using viruses to bring other parts, other treatments into the body. You're using measles. Is the measles particularly good for a certain reason? Why not use, let's say, the cold virus or something like that?
Well, you raise a really good point because, you know, I've already said to you that antibodies are able to prevent this virus from being effective. And the same is true, I think, of other viruses. So ideally, you need an armamentarium of different viruses so that you can find a virus against which the patient does not have antibody. And there is no reason why any virus shouldn't be developed as an anti-cancer weapon. And in fact, many different viruses are being developed for that purpose.
Dr. Kaur, can you tell us about what Dr. Russell was talking about, making cancer-killing viruses work better with other cancer drugs?
Sure. I think there's a lot of research in the area which is looking at chemotherapeutics that are currently used for patients and how they combine with viral therapies to allow really optimal dosage scheduling for patients. And so the study that he was referring to was really a study where we looked at a drug that's a proteasome inhibitor and is FDA approved. And we looked at how the treatment of cells with this inhibitor set up a response in the cells, which is usually associated with resistance to this drug. And that response really allowed the virus to replicate much better. It was a two-pronged approach wherein the cancer cells would die of this drug treatment, and the ones that were developing a resistance mechanism were now extra sensitive to viral infection and replication.
Wow, it seems very helpful for further research.
And hello?
I say it seems hopeful for further research, and I imagine you're going to be taking it another step in studying it.
Absolutely. I think based on this study, there's a this was a multi-investigator project. We looked at several different cancers in combination with bortezomib and viruses. And based on this study, there's patient testing of some of the viruses that are available in combination with bortezomib that are being planned at The Ohio State University.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, Dr. Russell, where do you go from here? What would you like to do next? This new study?
Well, yes, we're going to enter into this phase two study with measles virus, but that we have other ways of circumventing the antibody barrier that we're very interested in. One approach is to, instead of giving the virus just as a naked virus into the bloodstream, we can actually infect cells and use the cells as Trojan horses to carry the virus to the cancer in the body. That approach has been shown to be an effective way in mice of getting around the antibody barrier, and so we are very excited about moving that forward to clinical testing. And in addition to that, we have other viruses for which there's a much lower frequency of antibody in the human population that's going to block them.
Well, I don't think anybody had thought about using viruses before we heard you talking about it. Thank you very, very much, Doctor, for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Ira.
Thank you very much for having us.
Dr. Balvin Kaur, professor and vice chair of research at Ohio State Comprehensive Cancer Center, that's in Columbus. Dr. Stephen Russell, professor of molecular medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.